Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on the show, and what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Tis the season for chocolate hearts, roses, candy grams, and other hallmarks of Valentine's Day. Love is in the air. Our culture places a high premium on romantic love. Just listen to any Taylor Swift song or watch one of the many rom-coms on your Netflix homepage. Though romance can be meaningful, it can also overshadow a steadier, slower-burning type of love. Friendship. According to the American Psychological Association, stable, healthy friendships are crucial to our well-being and our longevity. The drama and dependability of friendships are also the subject of many movies in their own right. Let's take a listen to a few.
Now, I do have some obligations, but the truth is this weekend is all about the flossy posse. We're going to be staying up late, drinking, making memories that we can laugh about the rest of our lives, because that is what a girl's trip is for.
I love you, man.
I love you too, bud.
I love you, dude.
I love you, bro Montana.
I love you, Holmes.
I love you, Broseph Goebbels.
I love you, Machacha.
I love you, Tico Brohe.
Okay. All right. Let's continue here.
In good times and bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for.
Those were clips from Girls Trip, I Love You Man, and Bridesmaids. Today we are sharing stories of platonic love. Call in and tell us about a person in your chosen family or close friend circle. What do you love about them? Do you have any weekly or monthly traditions that keep you close? Our number is 800-639-2211. You could also send us an email celebrating a close friend of yours to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Our first guest today is Erin Baker Menno. She's a mental health therapist in South Burlington, and she works with people primarily on relationship issues, family dynamics, and identity development. And she's going to help us kind of figure out why these friendships are so important in our lives at a time when a lot of times all people want to talk about is romance. Erin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Michaela, how are you?
Doing well. Hope you're staying safe on this snowy and icy day.
I am.
Okay, good. Erin, tell us a little bit more about platonic intimacy. What exactly does that phrase mean to you?
Platonic intimacy is that close friendship that no kind of, like, I can cuddle with you, but there is, it's not sexual. It's just like, you are my heart and we are in this together. And we are going to then, like on Girls Trip, we are going to have that Girls Trip together and just be fraudulent without tension, without just being ourselves, vulnerable, fraudulent. Is really what I think about when I think about those platonic friendships.
Mm. And for someone who isn't familiar with the term, could you also describe what a chosen family is? That phrase comes up a lot when we talk about the importance of friendships.
It does. So for me, you know, and I think everybody might define this a little differently, but for me, chosen family is the family that your heart gets to create. Right. So in many ways, that chosen family sometimes is a substitute for your biological family, depending on the social identities that you carry. I know that for many folks in the queer and trans communities, the biological families aren't always supportive. Right. So that we have to create a chosen family. But for many of us, chosen family is the ones that we built with love and care and also a deep understanding that we all deserve to be and have a home, and we all deserve to be seen and cherished. And if our biological families can or cannot provide that, we're able to receive that from the folks that we choose to be in our lives.
Well, we received a number of messages from listeners ahead of today's show about their close friendships and chosen family, including one from Thomas in Winooski, who writes, I have a wonderful marriage and I love my husband very much. But without the love of friends, life wouldn't be quite as amazing. I learned about the value of platonic love from my mom and her friend group, a tight-knit group of single moms who became aunts to all us kids. We refer to my friend group as the Framily, family plus friends, and we're extremely close. We're aunts and uncles to each other's children and dogs, the first calls on good news, bad news, and needs for advice. Our group chat is certainly one of those that can be hard to keep up with and almost impossible to understand to someone outside of the Framily. Although many of us now live in different states, we make the routine effort to host get-together weekends and take regular trips to adventure around the country and abroad. When we are together, all that matters in that space and time is each other. We've been through so much together, have so many shared memories, and get into such a groove when we are all together that many people think we aren't just friends, but family. And that's how we love it. I love that message from Thomas, Aaron. I'm wondering if you could pull out some threads that you heard in what he was talking about with the importance of a friendship that really borders on family.
Absolutely. I think some of the threads that I see are support and safety, that they are always there for each other, that they have those texts, that text group. I would love to be the fly on the wall, being able to read what was, you know, in those texts. It definitely also seemed like the celebration of life's moments, that they have more than just themselves. I love that. What did they say? Framily?
Yes. Like friends plus family. Framily.
Yes. Framily is such a beautiful phrase for exactly what they are. I imagine also that it's very intergenerational, and a lot of times within these platonic or chosen family, there's that mentorship that comes from having multiple people in your lives, that aunties and uncles who maybe they wouldn't have had if they didn't have the best friends of the mom. And then, right, they're able to have all of these intergenerational relationships as well. Mm. And I imagine there's a lot of healing that comes with that as well. So those are definitely some of the themes that I was hearing when Thomas was talking about his amazing family.
Mm. Well, you can call in and tell us about a close friendship of yours or your Framily, as Thomas puts it, at 800-639-2211. We have Roxanne in South Burlington on the line. Roxanne, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to call about my daughter-in-law. My last name is Love. My son was born on Valentine's Day, which is amazing. But he married his high school sweetheart. She and I almost instantly became best friends. They've been married for 30-plus years, and my husband, second husband, passed away almost about a year ago. She was here within a matter of hours. She stayed with me for 2 weeks. She helped me through taking care of everything. And then when she went home, because my son and grandson were home with COVID in Florida, but she called me twice a day, and she wouldn't let me text her because she couldn't hear how I really was. She wanted to hear how I was, not have it typed. She wanted to hear. And she's just been, I feel so blessed to have someone like her in my life, because so many people complain about their daughter-in-laws and their in-laws. And I've just been so lucky.
Oh, Roxanne, thank you so much for sharing that story. I'm also so sorry for the loss of your husband, and a happy early birthday to your son on Valentine's Day. What a wonderful day. Thank you for sharing. And if Roxanne's story maybe echoes with you, with a relationship that you have, maybe a family member or an in-law, someone who's married into your family that has become a close friend, you can call in at 800-639-2211. Aaron, what did you think of hearing Roxanne's story there?
I think I love that, absolutely. And that's hashtag goals for any one of us that have in-laws. And one of the pieces of kind of this platonic and chosen family is that support that we can give each other. I loved Roxanne's daughter-in-law said, no, don't text. I need to hear your voice every single day to make sure you're okay. Being there during difficult times, not just celebrating the big successes, right, but the hardest times, and being able to offer. She offered practical help, like, I'm here for you, whatever you need. And that is exactly what chosen family does.
Hmm. I wonder if you have ever heard of people like kind of formalizing that chosen family relationship. I mean, for a romantic love, there's, you know, a marriage ceremony, things like that. There are ways to celebrate other types of love, a baby shower for a child, for example. Are there ways you've heard about or ideas you have for celebrating and formalizing those types of chosen relationships?
Yeah, actually, I just heard that there is a group of, I think, up to 30 women who, during the Super Bowl every year, go to a spa right on the border of Canada, and they take the weekend every single year during Super Bowl Sunday, or not Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl weekend, and they stay together, and they are celebrating themselves. They're like, we don't want anything to do with football, and let's go, and they have a blast. I hear a lot about girls' trips. I think a lot about the power of sleepovers as adults. I don't know, have you ever done that before?
I have. I love a sleepover.
Yes, a sleepover, right? It was people who are just the people in your life that you're like your family, your chosen family, to be able to have that time to talk, to have those deeper conversations. Mm. So some of those pieces of, like, you don't have to, you know, friend dates. Another way that I've heard people really go, for me, I have a friend who I do pedicure with once a month, and we're just like, let's go. And sometimes they, where we go, they think that I'm my friend's mother, or they think we're partners, and it's so funny. We just laugh about it every single time we go. Right. So there's just beautiful ways that you can really create your own traditions and rituals.
Hmm. When have you noticed your patients struggling with friendship? Are there particular, I don't know, times in life or things that people go through in which sometimes it can be hard to maintain a friendship?
I do. What I see happen a lot is that friendships are hard when we do not account for the growth in each other. Because people change and people grow, and sometimes we forget that as friends. You know, if I've had a friend for 20 years, I was introduced to you as a certain way. But certainly over 20 years, I'm going to be a very different person, and hopefully I'm a better person. But sometimes those changes are hard for folks to celebrate and acknowledge in a person. And I've seen that, you know, for some folks, if they're not able to accept the changes in others, sometimes those friendships have a little bit of strife. Mm.
I also noticed a theme when I was looking for movie clips to play at the top of this show, that there are a lot of movies made about friendships that that are struggling when one friend is getting married or having a baby or hitting a big milestone that the other friend might not be at just yet, or might not choose for their life, but still might envy in a way or feel left out of. Does that come up in your sessions ever?
It does, yeah. And it's kind of the growth that I was talking about, because all of those things are going to drastically shift a person. One of the things, though, that really comes up, Michaela, is for adults. So the people that I see are adults, is it's really hard to make friends as adults. And I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but folks are like, how do I do this? Like, is there a Making Friends 101 course? And that is definitely something, because, you know, we're afraid of rejection. You know, when we were kids, you're like, let's just go on the sandbox and play in the sand and it's fine. But as we get older, there's so many things that obstruct who we are and our confidence, the traumas, the experiences. So people really have a hard time, like, how do I make friends now in my grown age of 47 years old?
Mm. Yeah, making friends as an adult, oh boy, is really hard. When I moved states a couple years ago, I really struggled with that process and figuring out how to connect with adults, for new adults in my life for the first time in many years. Mm-hmm. Do you have suggestions that you share with patients who might be, you know, trying really hard to make new friends as an adult?
I do. Well, first I remind folks that you're not the only one. Yeah. So I promise you, if you're like, should I ask them for coffee? Maybe I shouldn't. What do they say? The other person is probably having the exact same thought. And sometimes realizing, like, wait a minute, other people are also having a hard time making friends. Just gives you a little bit of relief, right? Like, oh, wow, I'm not the only one. And then I'm always like, and please just go. just go. Like the Galentine's Day event that happened at 126, I think it was last night. If you saw that and you wanted to go and you were a little scared, I want you to go. Even if you think you're the only one that's going to go and no one is going to be there, I promise you there are other folks who also just are going for connection. And connection is really important. And I think that there was a huge shift in connection after COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, that isolation is still, people are still feeling that and the impacts of that isolation even today.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, the Surgeon General even issued a warning about the loneliness epidemic in America in 2023. Yeah. Do you see that playing out for your patients?
I do. I see it for a lot of folks. But the good news is people are taking a chance, right? So as much as you know, we're talking about folks who are just like, you know, no, I'm really scared. I'm like, yes. And right, every week, let's do an assignment. And I want you to try. Go to that coffee shop. Go to that event. What are the things that you love to do? You like knitting? All right, let's find a knitting club for you. Let's figure these things out. And the more people really just try to step out and engage, it gets a little bit easier each time. But social anxiety is a very real thing. So I'm not invalidating that in anybody's feelings at all.
And when you do step outside that comfort zone and make friends that can turn into chosen family, the benefits really can show up in so many ways. We put a call out on Instagram for listeners to share what they love about their friends and chosen family. Here are a couple of the responses that we received. One person wrote, "They have shown me acceptance in a way that I hadn't thought was possible." Another writes, "We may not see each other very often, but we pick up right where we left off." One person says, "My chosen family surrounds me in unconditional love." Another says, "The love we share feels authentic and they feel like home." And one listener simply wrote loyalty. Erin, I want to share another email that we got ahead of today's show. It's from Julia in Worcester. Julia writes, "When the father of my childhood best friend died of COVID early in the pandemic, I was devastated. Since I was six, he'd been like family, and I couldn't imagine a world without him. Moments after getting the news, I called one of my adult best friends, Bill. I sobbed and sobbed, trying to speak through my tears, and Bill listened, holding me close from 300 miles away. That night, he sat with me in grief, just as so many times he sat with me in joy, paddling on a lake at sunset, celebrating my retirement, or playing harp at my daughter's wedding. Above all, he's taught me the value of presence, of bringing my whole self to those I love and letting them bring their whole selves to me too. The ancient Celts had a word for someone like this, Anamkara, soul friend. It's a gift like no other." Soul friend. I love that, don't you?
I love that so much. Could you read what that was again, the actual term?
Anamkara, a Celtic term.
That's beautiful. That is so beautiful. A soul friend. I think of that, you know, when you talk about, when I was talking about chosen family and I said, you create the family with your heart. That's exactly what that is. It's your soul friend. That's beautiful.
I'm curious if you ever notice familial patterns showing up in friendships, perhaps a difficult pattern of behavior that you grew up with that transfers over to your interactions with friends.
I do. I will say, you know, for me personally, I'm sure that everybody knows this, trauma goes with us for a very long time. And it takes a long time to heal from childhood traumas, and especially when it has to do with our biological families and the ties that happen with that. It's very difficult. And sometimes we don't heal from things that have happened to us. So some of the things that I see others work through is, am I worthy of love, to be honest with you? Like, will my friend love me if I am my most authentic, vulnerable, and silly, hot mess self? If I show them who I am, if I say that I'm upset, will they still love me? If I make a mistake, will they still love me? And a lot of folks feel that way. If I have to, you know, I have to be perfect in my relationship, or I will lose the connection that I have with folks. And, well, you know, with chosen family, when you have really close connections, it's actually not true because we really do accept each other. But that vulnerability is really hard to break through sometimes.
Yeah. How do you do it? Can you tell us how in a couple minutes on the radio?
Get a therapist. as I do, as a therapist does have a therapist. And I think it is, for me, when I do make mistakes and I say something that I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm sorry if I hurt you, I go back to them. I let them know this is where this was coming from. And I need you to tell me that I hurt you. And because you're so important to me, we're going to work this out, right? Do you want to work this out with me? Am I important enough in your life that we're actually going to have this conversation about it? If a tie is broken, can we bring it back? Can we tie it back in together? So it's not running away. You know, one of the things that we see, especially within our culture now, is ghosting, right? And ghosting a lot of times comes from a place of not wanting to be vulnerable and not wanting to work out a problem. So don't do that, right? You have to accept if you've made a mistake, and also for me to say, like, do you still love me? You know, I think sometimes people just need to ask that. I made a mistake. Do you still love me, though? Mm. And be vulnerable with it.
Can you tell our listeners who might not be familiar with the term ghosting what that means?
Yeah, ghosting, I would say, I mean, I'm sure that there's a better terminology for this, right? But ghosting is a lot of times a situation happens and you don't like what happened, so you do not talk or interact with that person anymore. So you block them on social media, you block them on your phones. It's almost as though you didn't exist. And a lot of times it's very confusing because the person who you're ghosting doesn't always understand what happened. So one day I'm talking to you and the next day you don't respond and I don't see you again for weeks or months. And that can be really damaging to folks, and it's definitely damaging to relationships. Hmm.
We just got an email from a listener named John who writes, radical love is an important kind of love. That is love that is not expected or deserved. When someone does you wrong and you find ways to love them anyway, that is radical love. And yeah, that's a lot of what we're talking about today, how that radical love shows up in friendships often. Before we let you go, Erin, I'm wondering if there is a friend or chosen family member in your life who you'd like to give a little extra love to today during this program we're doing on Platonic Love.
Oh my gosh. Yes. The one person that I think about right now is a friend who, her name is Eureka Batson. She is not in Vermont, but we just did a girls' trip. We did a Hallmark Christmas cruise. It was ridiculous. And she has known me for 28 years. And she has seen me at my hottest mess, my most ridiculous self, and still loves me to this very day. And that cruise and that trip together really reminded me that I'm like, wow, you really do love me and all my ridiculousness. So I just like give her a huge shout out. And I'm so grateful that I still have her in my life after all these years.
Oh. Erin Baker Menno is a therapist in South Burlington. Erin, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
If Erin's story of going on a friend trip on a Hallmark cruise maybe reminded you of a trip that you took with a close friend and you want to give a shout out to that person who you love today, that friend, we're celebrating platonic friendships today, right ahead of Valentine's Day. You can call in at 800-639-2211 or email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Our next guests are two women who have a friendship that has stood the test of time. They have been friends for half a century. Marion Austin and Marcia Rose both live in Rutland. Excuse me. Marion and Marcia, welcome.
Hello.
Marion, tell us how you two first met.
We met at a mutual friend's house. I remember sitting at this friend's table having lunch together, and she introduced Marcia and me, and she, when Marcia went to leave, she put her hand on my shoulder and invited me to this little church she was going to. And somehow that just kind of, that the touch and the invitation just came out of so much warmth that eventually I responded to that and joined her at that church. Mm. That's how we met. And that was in probably 1972, 73, someplace back then.
Mm, yes, and you two are both in your 90s now. You met in your 40s, so life has changed a lot over those years. Marcia, you invited Marion to church as sort of your first friend date. How important is spirituality and religion to the two of you and your friendship?
Well, we were both coming out of a very conservative background we were at a point in life where we were both ready and needing to grow spiritually and emotionally and mentally, and that little church was in a huge change of growing, and it just happened to be that place where we connected. And our backgrounds are different. Marion is from an urban situation, and I'm from a very rural one. But none of that matters. We shared the same values and priorities, and I think those are the things that seal friendships.
Hmm. Marion, what is your favorite thing about Marcia?
Oh, her sense of humor just shines through, and it's taken her through. She's had so many losses in her life, and yet she has not lost that that sense of humor and spontaneity that you know, it connects with the child within me. I think this is why we look at each other and we say, "Can you believe we're this old?" And we laugh because it's that kind of you know, humor and spontaneity that makes us wonder. I mean, we are just so blessed. And every week when we take turns picking each other up to go to church, and here we look at each other and say, "Well, another week's gone by, and here we are, and we're still driving, and we're still thriving." Really, I think it's a good way to put it. And yes, we are soul sisters. I appreciate what Erin said, because I believe that there are friendships where you connect on that spiritual level that make you, they're deeper and they're richer and they survive so much.
Hmm. And Marcia, what is your favorite thing about Marion?
She's constant. She's constant for people. She is there. And I think friends know that, and they turn to her and know that she will be there for them. You know? Hmm. 50 years is, this would be the length of our friendship. And that's a long time and a lot of twists and turns in that journey. But for both of us now to be able to look back on that and to share this point in life and still want to be alive and thriving and growing. And those are the things that I have had a lot of losses. In the last 10 years, I've lost most of my family that I was close to. And so a chosen family is a concept that stood out for me. And the little church that we go to, that we always call it our church family. Mm-hmm. So, and we all have friends outside of that. But that's part of the core. Yeah. Hmm.
I hear that you two live close to each other and have taken turns driving each other places. Marion, how else do you look out for one another?
Well, I have her key. She has mine. And I think when we check in every week to see how we're doing, we respond when the call goes out for help, too. I've taken her dog to the vet at a moment's notice, and of course, the driving each other when we can't drive. We've both had times like that. But I think the friendship itself, the relationship, yes, it's gone through changes, geographically distanced for a while, emotionally distant, but it was worth always... There's a foundation was there, and it was always worth working on and fixing. Erin mentioned forgiving and acknowledging mistakes, and I think we've done that. Mm. And Marcia mentioned my being constant and there for friends, but I don't know of anyone who was a friend like Marcia with with the kindness she shows and the way she checks in on people. Boy, I'm very blessed to have a friend like that. And I the fact that we live close to each other is a bonus.
Yeah. You've mentioned that there were times when you were in and out of each other's lives, and friendships, decades-long friendships in particular, have those waxing and waning moments. Marcia, could you tell us a little bit about how your friendship has grown and evolved over the decades, and maybe one of those times when you had both taken a step back?
It's just that the basis of our friendship stayed. I think when you share the same values and priorities, those don't change. Circumstances may take you closer or a little further apart for time, but you always know that you share that core. For both of us, it would be family, friends, and faith, family, and friends. Those are the core of what we both value. They are what we both live by, so to speak. You know. And that, like even in a marriage, personalities can be different. But if the values are the same, then the relationship survives, because that's what holds you together.
Hmm. You mentioned faith, family, and friends. Marian, I had been told to ask you about four F's that you live by. Is Marcia hinting at them?
It was definitely the fourth F. She mentioned the first three: faith, family, and friends. Fun. You've got to have fun. You've got to bring that into your life every day, even if, as both of us live alone, we laugh at things. We laugh at ourselves. We have to. You know, you have to find something to connect with that. So that fourth F is an important one for me. Mm. And, you know, the other thing, when we're talking about times when the friendship might have been distant or whatever, we both come from an era where you fix things. You didn't discard them. And like she said, the foundation of values was so important that it, even if there were times of distance, we came together again. It's like, I believe we're each on our own journey, individual journey in life, but the times when we converge and meet and walk together are just so important.
Marian Austin and Marcia Rose of Rutland, I have so enjoyed speaking to both of you today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Michaela.
Thank you for having us.
Well, before we take a break, let me take one more call. We have Joe in Danville on the line. Joe, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there, Michaela. I just wanted to give a shout out to my women's group of 36 years. There's seven of us, and we have met originally monthly, and then a couple times a year. We went snowshoeing yesterday. Six of us live in Vermont, and one person lives out of state. And we are all very much in contact with each other and always there for each other. It's an amazing, amazing group to be part of.
Oh, how lucky you are. And what a great way to celebrate friendship
lucky.
Than by going outside
Absolutely.
And snowshoeing. Going away to college is one of those times when you are forced outside of your comfort zone and you have to make all new friends. I, for one, hated this process. I had a very tight-knit group of high school friends who I missed like crazy, and it took me a full year to really find my people when I went away to college. But that was ages ago. Our next guest has been through the gauntlet of friend-making in college much more recently. Adrian Muir is a senior at Dartmouth College. She writes for the college newspaper, The Dartmouth, where she published an editorial last Valentine's Day in praise of platonic friendships. Adrian, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So I wonder if we could start by you reading a short excerpt from your editorial last year for us.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Great.
This Valentine's Day, I look forward to celebrating the abundance of fulfilling female friendships in my life over fruity drinks and al dente pasta, and not in a sad Bridget Jones way. Usually, this is where I'd insert a self-deprecating joke about how I'm forced to do this by default, but no. I'm genuinely psyched to cook vodka rigatoni, listen to Elvis ballads as the water boils, and handwrite love letters to my friends abroad. Whether you are in a committed relationship or not, I encourage you to tell your friends how much they mean to you this Valentine's Day. We really don't do it enough.
Mm. So true. I loved reading your piece. It felt so real and so funny. What was the reaction you got to it? Did anyone reach out to you about it?
Yeah, it got a pretty good reception, I think. I mean, one of the reasons I wrote the article in the first place is so much of the rhetoric around Valentine's Day focuses around romantic love. So I think I, in a way, like, gave a lot of people permission to just be excited about Valentine's Day without that expectation or, without adhering to the typical romantic associations with the holiday.
Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, making friends at college for some people, myself included, can be really tough. Where did you meet your core group of friends?
I was lucky in that I met a lot of my friends pretty early on in college. I think Dartmouth is a really small school, which creates like an atmosphere where you can kind of just like go up to anyone that first like year, that first quarter. And the expectation is that by the time you graduate, you're going to know everyone anyways. So you might as well just like go out on a limb, introduce yourself. But I met one of my closest friends on the Green, which is the central quad of Dartmouth's campus. Like during orientation, I just saw like a big group of girls sitting on the green, and I went up and introduced myself. And then a lot of my relationships were like, I built through classes that I had in common or clubs, etc.
Well, let's take a couple of calls while we have you on the line. We have Bill calling in from Connecticut. Bill, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How are you? I just heard you guys calling for a man to call in about a platonic friendship he's had for a long time. So I figured I'd give you guys a shout.
Thank you, Bill. Who you got?
My best friend, Josh, since my senior year of high school. We've been friends for 35 years. And the way, you know, the women are talking about how they're there for each other. They can laugh, they can joke, but they apologize. They build on their friendship. We do the same thing. It's actually wonderful to have a close male friend like that.
Oh, well, that's great to hear. Bill, thank you so much for calling in. We also have Ned calling from Hyde Park. Ned, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Michaela. I also heard you calling for male friend groups. I met someone named Amos Glick in Plymouth, Vermont in 1978. So I guess 47 years now. I've known him and got introduced to a friend group that he connected me with, all of whom went to Israel together. We've become a very close-knit group, and we are in daily text contact, and we plan get-togethers at least once a year. Just got back from a ski trip with three of those folks, but it's five of us who stay in very close touch.
Mm. That's great to hear. Ned, thank you so much for calling and telling us about your friend group. Adrian, Ned just mentioned how important like being in constant text contact is for friendships. Have you noticed that too? Is that like do a lot of your friends stay in close contact through a group chat or through social media, or is it more about in person time?
I think definitely both. I know that I'll have group chats that are active like 24 hours a day. And I'm like, sometimes I can be a bit of a Luddite when it comes to social media. I try and, I mean, I'm kind of only on Instagram. I don't like the idea of kind of only fostering friendships online. But I think it is nice, especially like you talked about going away from high school to college. Like, I think being able to contact your friends who you're not currently in the same place with through digital communication is huge.
Yeah.
One of our callers, Bill, mentioned that his best friend is somebody he's known since high school. And that made me think about how your high school experience must have been shaped in part, at least, by the pandemic. How did the COVID-19 pandemic affect your friendships? And did you become closer to anyone in particular during that time?
Yeah, for sure. I think COVID hit me during my junior year of high school, which is like the most social time. I feel like I was like, 17 years old. And when I got the like shelter in place orders, I was basically just like stuck in my childhood home, which included my mom, my dad, and my sister. This ended up, like, I credit this time to like really allowing me to get to know my sister on like a friendship level. I've always like loved my sister as family, but I think by spending so much quality time with her during the pandemic, I learned to love her as like a best friend as well. So yeah, we really like built that friendship, put in the hours. I also think when you think of love languages, quality time is such a big one. And I kind of, whenever someone will ask like, oh, what's your love language? How do you give or receive love? I feel like it's almost like the default is quality time, and then you can like have another one that's maybe a little more special. But I just don't think you can really build a friendship without the basis of like putting in the hours. And my sister and I definitely did that during the pandemic.
What about gifts? My love language is definitely gifts.
My love language actually is giving gifts as well, but that somehow I feel like it has a vapid connotation, but normalize gifts. Way of receiving love and giving it.
Adrian, you're a senior and graduation is probably fast approaching for you and your friends. How are you all enjoying these last few months together?
I think like I'm kind of like procrastinating being stressed out about the end of everything, not the end of my friendships, but the end of me being able to hang out with my friends on this campus every day. But yeah, I think we're just like doing all of the things we love to do together, the things we've done in the past. We like are going to continue to celebrate like various Dartmouth traditions as a unit. But yeah, definitely daunting, the premise of graduation.
And I have to ask, since you wrote this essay for the Dartmouth College newspaper last year about Valentine's Day, what are your Valentine's Day plans this year?
This year, my sister's actually driving in from New York, which is exciting. Good callback to COVID. And I think we're gonna definitely cook something good. I might borrow my al dente pasta plan from last year. That's like a crowd pleaser. Maybe get a bottle of wine. And I also look forward to introducing her to a lot of my friends in college that she hasn't met before. So kind of bridging the like two really important friendships in my life.
Mm. It sounds like a perfect day. Adrian Muir is a senior at Dartmouth College and an arts reporter for the campus newspaper. Adrian, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, let's go back to the phones before we have to wrap up today's show. Richard is calling in from Williamsville. Richard, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I went to UVM in the fall of 1965, and I found one other guy there who had long hair. That is not a crew cut, maybe 3 inches of hair. His name's Ken, and he and I knew each other quite well during those 4 years, and we roomed together our senior year. I introduced him to the graduate school in Putney, where he went and met his wife, so I take credit for that.
As you should.
And he introduced me to pottery, which I still do for a living, which we learned from George Scatchett at UVM. We still ski, play tennis, play ping pong. We used to play soccer and hockey together, and he lives 12 miles away. So it's an enduring friendship.
That's incredible. Can I ask, do you have any tips for somebody who might be, kind of moving away from that college atmosphere of living really close to their friends, and is a little worried about a friendship faltering. How did you and your friends stay strong over the years?
The only thing I can give you is the golden rule for friendship is don't expect your friends to act or be who you want them to be. Accept them for who they are.
Hmm. Yeah. And lastly, Richard, I just love that your friendship dates all the way back to the 60s and you're still close today. Did your friendship change when you both, or I'm not sure if you both have separate families or married and had kids, but did that affect your friendship in any way?
Not at all. His kids, basically, I consider them partly my kids. So, and they both still live in Vermont, and they both turned out really well. I don't know if I had any influence on the good behavior from them, but they're wonderful. One of them raises sheep in northern Vermont, and the other one runs the food delivery for people that need extra food right here in Windham County.
Wow.
And he's, you know, he and his wife are very good friends of mine. So, my best friends, really.
Yeah. Do you two still have long hair?
I can't. I have a fringe. He does. But, no, they're not crew cuts. But I still play soccer and ice hockey, and we still play badminton and tennis once in a while, tennis. So, and I'm playing badminton with him tonight, for that matter. So, it's been a great friendship. It's enriched my life, and he grew up. He was supposed to be a doctor. He was in pre-med there, and now he makes pottery for a living. And I studied philosophy at UVM, and now I also make pottery. And
wow. Well, Richard, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about that friendship. What a wonderful way to wrap up today's show. Thank you to everyone who shared stories of friendship and platonic love.